Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, cheeseburger philosopher, taco deviant, and mezcalaholic. I don't know how to quite say that one.
And I'm Eddie Kim, D.C. writer, Mile High Club treasurer, and mercenary bartender. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind a line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. Unfortunately, I can't join you all since I'm cruising at an altitude of 40,000 feet on my way to Seoul, Korea at the moment. But Matthew has upgraded my face for radio with owners from three of DC's dining and drinking gems.
That's right. While Eddie is flying bartender class to Seoul, I'm flying that solo yellow lifestyle back here in the studio.
He sounds good, huh?
He does sound good. He has a little bit more of a robotic quality, though. I'm sure that's just the airplane.
It's like a hologram person.
Yeah. Let's just treat Eddie as if he were a hologram.
Yeah, definitely.
And we should all know that he's listening to us very awkwardly, squished between a set of elbows. Now, this week, I'm fortunate enough to be surrounded by some of my all-time favorite DC restaurant owners, proprietors, and hospitality badasses. The restaurants and bars are beacons in the DC food scene and basically always top my list of recommendations for out-of-towners. I'm talking Jill Tyler of Tail Up Goat, Suzuka Seki of Izakaya Seki, and Clementine Thomas of Shea Billy. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Or girls. That's more appropriate. How's everybody doing today?
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This is my first time in the studio.
It's pretty fun. You're saying you're pretty nervous. Not to blow you up on the spot.
Yeah.
I feel like it's
public
sometimes
speaking,
it's just
lots of people listening on full display.
You look amazing with headset.
Thank you.
Yeah. The headset, yeah, it makes everybody look really cool.
It does. Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, one of the reasons Jack became a DJ.
Yeah, I'm just going to go like this with one
optics.
Hand the whole time.
Yeah. It looks cool if you hold one finger to your right ear.
Because that's the secret.
I can hear you guys better this time.
I'm totally jamming out to whatever you guys are saying right now.
Feeling it.
Yeah, spring has sprung. The sun is out. Flowers are blooming. Menus are shifting. And pollen is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Are you guys all doing big things at your locations right now? Change things up?
Patio season.
That's huge for you guys.
Yeah. It's great. We love it. It's crazy. It doubles the capacity of our restaurant. So it's always interesting getting back into the groove.
Right. There's some muscle atrophy that happens over winter when you're just like, nobody's used to kind of working those numbers and doing those things. Well, this is Shift Drink. We have a Shift Drink. And usually we ask our guests, but Eddie Kim was very bummed he couldn't be here today. And so I thought, in tribute of Eddie Kim's departure this week, we would do one of his personal favorite shift drinks, a rendition of the classic Boilermaker. However, with a twist, this is a grapefruit Rattler and some green chartreuse. Now, the idea, and I opened all these, and then I realized there's no room to actually float the chartreuse, so you all have to have a sip, pass them down this way, and then I'll top it off with some chartreuse. Super refreshing.
That is refreshing.
Yeah, it's just right.
So, nothing says spring like that first day when you start drinking Rattlers again in preparation. I can't even make it the whole summer drinking Rattlers. I usually last until about June, but...
Because you get so tired of them?
Yeah, personally. Then I move on to my other beach favorites. All right, this is a process.
Doing great.
Thank you. So what was everybody up to before this? prepping?
Having some coffee. Cup we all race for. Delicious.
It really is good. They know what they're doing over here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just pour mine in. Here we go. All right. Now, we usually play a game to kind of get to know our guests. We call it Two Truths, One Lie.
Two Truths, One Lie.
Now, last week, Eddie and I reigned supreme over Don Lee, bartender, barman extraordinaire. However, this week, I am severely outnumbered. So we're going to do it this way. This week, I'm going to ask all three of you to just divulge your secrets to me. And I'm going to wait until the end, and I'm just going to line them up and knock them down. So, two truths, one lie. We'll start with Jill, Clementine, and then Suzuka. And then I'm going to knock them all down at the same time.
I like it.
Totally blank right now.
You got time. You got time.
I'll go first. When I was little, I told everyone my name was Melon.
Okay.
My senior yearbook most likely was to own a restaurant or bar. And I hate rosé.
All right. Okay. I had a lion cub as a pet when I was little. I once waited on Dave Chappelle and seriously fucked up his order.
Okay.
And I am an award-winning concert pianist.
Wow.
Those are good.
Woo.
Wow.
I went to summer camp. I know this game.
Clementine for the win.
Yeah, what was the first one again? Sorry.
I had a lion cub as a pet when I was little.
Oh, man, that's cool. Okay.
Suzuka, you're up.
I'm half Japanese.
Okay.
I'm really bad. I'm really good at lying, but I'm freezing up right now.
That's fair. To be fair, most of our guests are really good at the lying part.
I'm really good at lying.
Yeah. That's another.
That's my second
one.
Good pull.
And,
Ooh, you know what? Just to mix it up, I'm gonna give you two truths, one lie, and you can decide for all of us.
Oh, okay.
All right. I was once an extra on Dawson's Creek. I have been chased by a rogue elephant. And I studied Kung Fu under a national living Chinese treasure.
Those were all really good.
Yeah.
Those
were really
good. I'm just going to go with my favorite color is purple.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I believe...
Crutching this.
I believe that you actually... hate rosé.
I love rosé.
You love rosé.
So that was
okay.
My lie.
Okay, cool. Moving on.
You're good at this.
Yeah, you guys aren't giving yourselves enough credit here. You... What was your lie, Jill?
Oh, did I get this totally wrong? I've totally fucked this up already.
You told three truths about yourself, didn't
you?
No,
I hate rosé. Or I love rosé. That was my lie. Oh, okay. I said I hate rosé.
Ah, that's right.
Did I mess this up?
No, Matt messed that up.
Yeah, I messed it up.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's for you, man.
Thank you.
I was like, shit.
That sound actually calms me now. It's become a very calming sound in my life. It's how I go to sleep at night. I'm going to say the lion cub is a lie.
That is true.
That is true.
Ooh.
Okay. What was the lie?
That I'm a pianist.
Ah, man. Okay. I'm going to say you love the color purple.
Wrong.
Good. I'm glad we got this game out of the way.
Man, that was good.
That was brutal. Eddie Kim, I hope you're loving your middle seat there. All right. Well, let's start talking because you guys are all proprietors, owners. Was this the life that you thought you'd be living? You mentioned that in high school you were...
Yeah, this is totally the life I thought I would be living, I think. I think I talk about this a lot. I went through this, like, pull back and forth after graduating college, kind of leaving the industry, coming back to the industry, because I was like, oh, I got my college degree. I think I'm supposed to be doing something else with it.
What was your college degree in?
Public communications.
Okay.
I went to AU. That's when I first moved to D.C., so I've been here since 2002.
Right on.
Yeah, it's the weird year where I've lived in D.C. as long as what I consider home. You know, the flip is happening this year, which is weird. like, oh, I'm an adult and this is really my home. But yeah, I think, you know, after enough years of kind of going back and forth, I just came to the conclusion that restaurants were it for me. I love this industry. So yeah, I've been working in restaurants since I was 14. So a long time.
Yeah.
20 years.
It adds up pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It really does.
How about you, Compton?
No, I was going to be a theater professional.
Not a pianist. Just for the record.
Not a pianist. So obviously I started working in restaurants to pay the bills, and it kept being the thing that paid the bills and started to scratch a lot of the same itches that theater did for me. So I was super interested in performing, but also in directing. And when I got into management, it felt like it was a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
So much drama.
All the drama all the time. So yeah, and I kept getting opportunities with the companies that I worked for. So it really took over my life in a very positive way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that constantly comes up is that you're performing a show every mm-hmm. night or every mm-hmm. day.
Yeah.
I mean, your guests don't know that you've had a shitty day, or hopefully don't. That's the goal, right?
Yeah.
Because you got to slap on that smile and offer mm-hmm. them, you know, mm-hmm. all the hospitality.
Yeah.
Suzuka, is this something that you...
I'm going to be an owner.
No.
That wasn't my impersonation of you. That was actually, just my little kid voice.
That sounds exactly like me. I actively rejected working in a restaurant because my dad had one, and I knew how hard they worked and how little they made, and was like, I don't want that. But I came around.
Was there an aha moment, or was it kind of just everything kind of fell into place?
Yeah, my aha moment was just before we opened Seki, basically.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, I really like food. It's the only thing I like right now.
Yeah.
I should probably do that, so. Yeah.
And here we all are.
And here we are.
I know personally, my background was in filmmaking, and cooking had always been kind of a passion of mine. I decided to leave filmmaking, was burnt out on it, and had been working in the industry off and on throughout my, you know, my college careers and whatever. And then just found myself, there's this whole part of me that was like I wasn't paying attention to, basically, and that was cooking and the industry and all that stuff. And so what had been kind of in the background is now my everything. And it's, I think a lot of people have the same story where you don't go into it expecting to be full-time industry or to own a restaurant, but we get there. Mm-hmm. And when we get there, it becomes our everything. And it becomes our true passion, and it becomes mm-hmm. what we live for, because at the end of the day, it's long hours and it's a lot of pressure, and it's pretty grueling, honestly. So in an industry that for too long has kind of been predominantly male dominated, what does it mean for you guys to be owners and operators personally in this day and age? That's a big question.
It's a big question.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's really great about it is creating culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I've been really, really lucky throughout growing up, you know, having a really strong single mother who just always pushed my sister and I. And I think that kind of has translated into each step of what I've done in my life. And then I've been lucky enough to have really strong female mentors throughout mm-hmm. college and different careers that have encouraged me to say, this is expectations and these are standards. And this behavior is okay and this behavior isn't. And kind of finally getting to the point where I was able to take all those lessons learned and open the doors of Tail Up Goat with Bill and John, my partners, to create a culture that stood for all those things we believed in.
Yeah.
And I think having three women in this room is really great, but not necessarily representative of what owner and management culture can always look like.
Sure.
So we're really lucky to have
absolutely.
You know, three in a room right now. And so I think that's something that is like always on my mind and is how we continue to grow that. Because ultimately, I think where we're going with parts of this conversation is what is most important to creating the best culture is having the most diverse group of ownership and managers possible in
Absolutely.
This industry, so that you kind of have the ability to learn and speak to as many experiences as possible. And so I think that is one of the things that's been really rewarding is mm-hmm. creating a culture that empowers all of my staff, female yeah. or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right on. I mean, culture, creating culture is, I think, the most important thing that you can do as an owner and as a manager. And for me, like when I was working in theater and in restaurants, what I didn't find the mentorship in theater, I found that in restaurants, and I was so hungry for someone to kind of show me a path and be a model for what I thought I could do. And that turned out to be in restaurants, and it turned out to be the women that I worked for.
Sure.
And I am where I am because I've worked for really amazing women managers. And to have the opportunity to create that for others is really important.
Is this a time we could shout out some of those mentors or?
Sure. Oh, Jocelyn DeHaas with the Trist.
She's amazing.
She's amazing.
She's just force of nature.
She's taught me everything I know and continues to teach me every day. All of us, I think.
Right on.
Learned a lot from her.
I was really lucky to work for Anne Marler for mm-hmm. many years at Comey and Little Sarah, and she is just.
Yeah, she's a legend.
A legend. That yeah. is the exact way to sum it up. I was really, really lucky to have that experience. And then not only necessarily like managers I've worked for, but people I've worked with. Mm-hmm. You know, Genevieve at Bad Saint is a huge resource when I'm just, I'm not sure necessarily how I want to handle this situation. She's always so good at talking it out and like having other points of view. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's true with my service manager, Tara Smith, who I've been lucky enough to work with since we opened. You know, it's just surrounding yourselves with all these people. They're not necessarily all managers, but.
Right.
Or have been my managers, I guess is a better way to say it, but colleagues and peers as well.
Mm-hmm. What is the difference? I mean, is there a difference between the ways that women and men approach hospitality? I think we all come from different backgrounds, and you know, as I said, you guys are all kind of beacons in the DC food and beverage scene. Is there, and you know, honestly, it might not be gender related, but I'm just kind of throwing it out there.
I think it's less gender related and more just like personality. Like, I don't know, at least for me, I am drawn to this industry because every day you open the doors and it's going to be something different and it's going to be busy and you're going to be keeping track of a million of things in your head while like really taking care of people. That is my favorite part of what I do. I've learned a lot of other stuff as we've opened the restaurant, but ultimately when the doors open every day is the thing that is the best part to me.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's gender related. Like Bill, my partner, is one of the most hospitable people I know. And he's super intelligent. If anyone ever gets to the end of the internet, it will be him.
Right.
You know? And he, like, uses all that
so there
knowledge.
Is an end. Yeah, I knew it.
He can interact with anyone about anything because his, like, knowledge base is just so vast. And because of that, people always feel really well taken care of, maybe an entirely different way from me. But it's not because of gender. It's just because who we are.
Sure.
I'll talk The Bachelor with people and, you know, he'll talk.
And there's culture, obviously, involved in these things, too. And we all come from different backgrounds in that way, and I know from my time abroad, even like living in Nepal, like directness is not something that's really done. It's all done through indirectness. So something might be bad, but they'll never say it's bad. They'll say they like it, and then they'll like kind of just quietly not enjoy it, you know. And we all there's a lot of shades in hospitality and how we do these things.
How long were you in Nepal?
I lived in Nepal for about 6 months.
Amazing.
That was an experience that definitely shaped my understanding of food because the family that I was living with, you know, they grew rice, and rice for me had just been something that you microwaved or, you know, put in a pot for 20 minutes. And it was suddenly this every all-encompassing lifestyle. Rice was something that you gave for religious, you know, FX in the morning, or it was, you know, class based on what kind of rice you actually grew. And if you had a bad harvest, that was, you know, going to be a tough year for you. So that was kind of like one of my earlier food memories. But I don't even know where I was going with this. I just, I don't think it's something that can be completely whittled down to gender, as you're saying.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that goes into it. I know I'm personally working on opening up a space with a couple other people right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Oh, man, I'm adulting at an exponential level right
Good
now.
Good work.
And one thing that keeps circling around, circling back and rearing its ugly head is tipping. Let me ask this. As is, does our tipping system work? I see a lot of pointing fingers.
Well, we were just, you know, who wants to talk first? I think I can speak for my employees and many other employees that I've spoken with surrounding this. And I think kind of the subtext here, is it okay if I get into that?
Yeah.
Just well, why we're yeah, talking yeah, about that question?
Yeah.
Or does that make sense or not make sense? You told me that you're in charge.
It's a conversation, but let's talk about just tipping in general, and then we can get down there.
Awesome. I think the tipping system, I think it works. You know, I am fond of saying up until a little over 2.5 years ago, I was a tipped employee. And being a tipped employee allowed me to live in D.C. and pay for American University and live in D.C. while I did that and kind of stay in D.C. through that whole time. So for my personal experience, you know, tipping was something that afforded me a middle to upper middle class lifestyle from the moment I was 18 and on my own taking care of myself.
Yeah.
My experience has been really similar. I mean, one of the funnest things about opening the restaurant Chez Billy is that we sort of collected a bunch of people that we had worked with at other restaurants or during our time in DC, me and my partners and I, and a lot of them were looking for a place to kind of land and call home. And the fact that you can do that as a tipped employee and sort of find your home base and make a really comfortable living is just so awesome. And like Jill, I spent many, many years as a tipped employee.
Right.
Got me out of my parents' house. I didn't have to rely on them anymore. It enabled me to become an independent, functioning human, which is really exciting.
And now you're podcasting.
Da, 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 da. I've arrived.
How about you, Suzuka?
I would say, I can only speak from the experience of how I perceive our employees are doing, which is that I think every single person who's worked at Seki has been able to afford a lifestyle where they're also able to pursue their real passions and interests. Like, they treat, you know, their job very seriously, but at the same time, most of them have been part-time, and, you know, on their days off, they're able to go on tour because they're in bands, or do their artwork, or just do whatever pursuits they're trying to, like, experiment. Many of them are really, really young, so they're still trying to figure out and navigate the course of their life, and having a job, you know, as a tipped employee really helps them out. And I feel like I was the same. When you're younger and you don't have any employment experience yet, the one job you know you can go to is a restaurant, and you can make a decent enough money until you figure out what it is that you want to really do, whether that's to stay in the restaurant industry or, you know, go get a degree or whatever it is. Really can't think of any other jobs that are like that.
Yeah.
I mean, where you it's are really able to sure. make substantial amounts of money and have time flexibility and just enough structure to be able to, like, create a life for yourself outside of that work.
Yeah. 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 No, it's definitely unique. I know from my own perspective, I've worked, you know, behind the line and in front of the house. And one thing that, you know, kind of gets me is that there is a discrepancy between people that work in the kitchen versus people that work in the front of the house. And that's, I know that, you know, something that a lot of restaurants have tried to circumnavigate. Danny Meyer's Union Square Hospitality Group, you know, has been doing a push for the last few years, not quite successfully yet. I know local operators, we had Sam Adkins of Sally's Middle Name, who tried it out and has since reverted back to tipping. So there is a discrepancy. And that's why, like, you know, it's something I'm personally wrestling with, and it's a big question. Is this something that you guys have tried to address at your restaurants at all?
It's something we've tried to address at Tail Up Goat. When John, my husband, and I met, I was front of house, and he was working back of house, and, you know, it was very clear the differences we were both making working in restaurants at the same time. And I think one of the things we thought when we were opening Tail Up Goat is what steps can we take to create a culture where everyone has the ability to kind of cross train if they're interested and see what all their hard work looks like, but also try to act on that wage discrepancy in some way. Sure. So what we had decided to experiment with and have been doing it for 2 years, it's been really successful, is our cooks have a really interesting schedule. So they get kind of exposure to all sorts of different parts of the day. They spend one day as daytime prep. They spend 3 nights on the line. And then they have one night where they are in a front of house support role, where they are a back waiter. So they are interacting with guests. They are helping reset tables, drop off food.
That's awesome.
You know, make coffees, kind of all those kinds of things. And it's been really cool because there was a night where one of our cooks, Lily, was dropping off a plate and recently, and the guest was like, "Can you tell me about this aioli?" She's like, "I made that aioli yesterday. Let me tell you all about it," you know? And it's... Yeah. These really cool moments, especially since our staff are all really driven young cooks who are looking, you know, probably one day to helm their own kitchen. And sure. So they're seeing kind of the front of house side, which is, I think, pretty valuable experience.
Absolutely.
And when they are in that front of house role, they are still paid their back of house wage, but they are also a full member of the tip pool that night.
Ah, okay.
You know, we run a tip pool restaurant where we believe everyone, nothing works without the rest, right? So yeah. Bartender, server, back waiter, it is all just an equal member of the tip pool. So it's just a really, for us, it was a way to kind of address that front of back disparity and also let the front of house have a day that was a little shorter.
Yeah.
Cook's hours.
That's fascinating.
Are notoriously long and hard and get a little more money in their pocket.
Right on. Have you named this system yet?
We have not. That would be a good idea.
I feel like it needs a cool acronym.
It does need an acronym.
Very DC.
Yeah. That would be very DC of us.
How about you two?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been really lucky. We've had a couple examples of people who worked for us where they worked in the back as well as the front, whatever their schedule allowed. So they either helped out with prep and then switched over to the front in the evening. We haven't had any cooks willing to work the front
right.
of the house. It's pretty nerve-wracking, I think, when you're used to being...
It can be just kind of left brain, right brain, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. Talking to guests is a totally different kind of part of your brain that you, you know, that you utilize.
Yeah.
In terms of the wage disparity, I mean, we're pretty transparent and we're very, very fair. And in our case with the front, the tips... you know, we can't touch the tips, obviously.
Yeah.
I think... The house likes it that way. It's they own the front of the house workers own those tips. They do what they want to.
Yeah.
It's equally pooled and distributed amongst themselves. And I basically have nothing to do with it other yeah. than to write their checks.
Right, which is the way it should be.
Basically, like they tell me what they made and I write them a check.
Right on.
And in terms of the, you know, with the back of the... So we do have two different systems running between hourly cooks and salary and then the front of the house. But it's worked. I've heard no complaints.
Okay. Good.
So our system is a little bit different. We're maybe a little bit more old school. We don't pool, at least in the bistro. So we have a bistro and a wine bar.
Right.
The wine bar does pool. The bistro front of house doesn't pool, but they tip out the support and bar staff. And, you know, most of our back of house staff has been working with us since the day we opened our doors. And we are constantly reevaluating people's pay rates. We're really conscientious about having evaluations and giving people raises based on time and experience and ability. And we also work really, really hard to promote people from within. So mm-hmm. dishwashing with us is basically a starting point.
Sure.
And we've had many dishwashers move into the front of house. Many of them have moved to the line. The possibilities are really endless. And I think, like Suzuki was saying, this industry is really unique in that, you know, where else can you start at a position like a dishwasher
yeah.
and be able within 6 months to shoot up to a completely different higher level position
yeah.
And that is something that we can really offer our employees. And I think also something to note is that DC is a really competitive city when it comes to hiring staff.
Sure.
And so it would, if we were underpaying our people, our back of house people, we wouldn't be able to find anyone.
Right.
They could just leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is for sure. There's definitely a shortage these days. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a little breather. We'll step out for a second. We're going to cut to a break. When we get back, we have a looming issue, an elephant in the room. Eddie came on an airplane, I-77.
More original music from Kido on the break, K-I-E-D-O. We will be right back.
Ela está em cama, mas concorrência a trem, sabe que quem manda a gente. Se liga que tá do outro lado, e aqui a chapa é quente. O baile vem abaixo, e o teu coração balança. Segura esse soco no peito, e o cachelo está em cama. Mas concorrência a trem, sabe que quem manda a gente. Se liga que tá do outro lado, e aqui a chapa é quente. O baile vem abaixo, e o teu coração balança. Segura esse soco no peito. Cachela está em cama, uma concorrência trem, sabe que quem manda a gente. Se liga aqui do outro lado, e aqui a chapa é quente. O baile vem abaixo, e o teu coração balança. Segura esse soco no peito, e o cachela está em cama. Uma concorrência trem, sabe que quem manda a gente. Se liga aqui do outro lado, e aqui a chapa é quente.
All right, we are back. I am joined with a whole bevy of awesomeness. We have Suzuka Seki, Clementine Thomas, and Jill Tyler. We have been talking about tipped wages, and we're about to get to the crux of it. There is a little conversation that's been circling DC these days around Initiative 77. Who would like to talk about that?
I will take it.
All right.
So 77 is a ballot initiative that's going to appear on the June 19th DC primary ballot. And essentially it is going to ask voters whether or not they think the tipped minimum wage should be eliminated. So it's really important to understand how tipped employees are paid. I think there's a lot of sort of mystery around that. And the organization pushing this legislation is taking advantage of that. So the way that our employees are, our tipped employees are paid is this. DC allows tipped employees to be paid a wage below the minimum wage. Right now, the tipped minimum wage is $3.33.
It's a nice round number.
Yeah. So we as employers have to guarantee that tipped employees' base wage, that $3.33 at minimum, plus their tips equal the real minimum wage. So yeah. Right now that's $12.50.
Right.
We as employers are on the line for the difference if it doesn't make it up. And that's a requirement by law. So any tipped employee working at a business that is adhering to the law is being paid the minimum wage.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the organization that's pushing ballot initiative 77, they're called ROC, Restaurant Opportunities Centers. They're based out of New York. And it's part of this larger campaign they are running nationally called One Fair Wage, where they're essentially trying to eliminate the tipped minimum wage nationally.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from what I've heard and what I've read, it's forecasted to pretty much overwhelmingly pass.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we live in a very liberal town. 97% of us voted on the liberal side of things in the last election, and I think at the heart of it, we hear, oh, you know, fair wages and fair labor, obviously. Why should we be voting against this? This is like a super softball, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
I think, you know, first and foremost, again, to echo what Clementine just said, is if our tipped employees were not making the minimum wage between the tipped minimum wage and their tips, we are responsible for making up the difference. I think the reality is our employees in front of house and tipped positions make far more than minimum wage, which allows restaurants who operate on very, very thin margins. I think there's also like not, you know, I think people think restaurants, you see a full restaurant and you assume that restaurant is doing really, really well. Industry standard for restaurants is somewhere between 0 and 15% profits at the end of the year, with most more in the 3 to 5% range.
Right.
And so labor
huge profits.
Huge profits.
Yes. Rolling.
Yeah, rolling. And labor tends to make up somewhere between 30 and 40% of your costs at the end of the day.
Right.
Before you add anything else in. So this legislation, my concern is, one, it's increasing labor costs by a huge number to go to $15 an hour for our tipped employees, which is going to divert resources from the back of house, which we talked about before the break,
right,
already being the position that tends to make less money in a restaurant. It will not allow us to put the same resources to our back of house staff. And I think my really big concern is that ROC has admitted this legislation will cause job loss. I think one of the things that we can all be really proud of in DC is that, you know, we have a pretty strong job market, at least in restaurants. Restaurants,
sure,
employ about 50,000 people in DC,
yeah,
which is a really huge number. And I think that this legislation, while well-meaning, I think it's well-meaning, but without industry knowledge, in a way that will create a really hard environment for restaurants to continue to succeed in this city without things getting infinitely more expensive. You know,
I mean, so what does this mean? So say this passes, it's 2025 is when this goes into effect?
Yes.
Okay.
So there are small increases already happening. So DC Council last year, am I right on that? Last year, already voted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour from where it currently is at $12.50. The next increase happens on July 1st, where tipped minimum wage goes to $3.89 and full minimum wage goes to $13.25.
Okay.
And I think one really important thing to know is like everyone in this room supports that decision.
Yeah.
Minimum,
yeah,
wage should have gone up to $15,
yeah,
an hour,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
possibly, you know, needs to continue to go up from there. The law as it's written now is $15 an hour tied to CPI. And I think everyone's really in support of that. But practically what this would mean to change the tipping system is that small businesses like ours, over 90% of restaurants in DC are owned by small independent operators. You're going to add tens of thousands of dollars a month to your labor costs.
So,
and most, yeah, restaurants aren't going to be able to... I'm sorry, I've just lost my words.
Yeah.
Most restaurants are not going to be able to take on that.
To take the,
yeah, that's, yeah, I mean, you're
that
adding,
puts most restaurants in a loss.
You're adding a lot of weight
to monthly,
very thin margins.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Got it.
So while we are business owners, you know, obviously speaking, we can't speak on behalf of the workers, our employees necessarily, but I think as independent operators and the particular people we are, we care very much about them, you know, providing for them like a safe and lucrative environment to work in. And, but at the same time, we can't shoulder the burden of having one particular cost go up five times.
Right. Right.
You know, it doesn't matter if it's rent, this is a particular case, or it's wages. I don't think there are many businesses that can take a five time hike.
Right.
And be sustainable.
Yeah.
I think,
and that's kind of what we're struggling with.
Also, you know, something we've been grappling with as we talk about this issue is, earlier in the podcast, I mentioned how I really went back and forth on whether or not this was the industry for me. You know, should I be doing something more 9 to 5? And I think Suzuka touched on this. What's really great about restaurants is there's flexibility for people who maybe are just in it for a few years while they figure out next steps. But
yeah,
something that's been really important to me, and I think true of a lot of my peers in the industry, as kind of this next class of kids, as I refer to myself in that group, starts businesses, that we are creating environments that allow for this to be considered a career.
Yeah.
A lot of us have employees who live in the district, who are able to buy homes, are choosing to have children because they are in a place that is a career, just like something
are we
9 to 5.
Third wave hospitality?
I think so. And I think that that's really important to remember. And one of the reasons I'm here is we've had really open conversations with our staff. We've talked about what this would mean to us as a business, because one of the things we've tried to do from day one is offer healthcare. We cover 50% of all our employees' healthcare, be it someone who works two nights a week as a host or full time.
Which is amazing.
Thank you. We have a 401k that, you know, we're not able to match as a small business at this point, but still a really valuable tool that makes it really easy for our staff to save towards retirement, which is, you know, a benefit that has not always been available to folks in this industry. And I think what's really disappointing is one of the first things that would happen as we try to stay solvent would be cutting benefits. Yeah. So all this work we have done to create a more professional environment and help people believe, you know, as much as I love Anthony Bourdain's shows and books, but like, we are not all what is presented in Kitchen Confidential. I think there's been a lot of work by our industry to
second wave.
that this is a real path and a real choice people make. And this legislation could really change how we're able to take care of our employees and impact them in a way that's not great. So when we've had these conversations with our staff, we've then sent out like anonymous polls.
Sure.
So if they don't want to speak to us directly, they can ask questions anonymously and answer some questions. And every single person on our staff said, we are against 77. Please speak out on our behalf, which is why we're here as a company.
Yeah.
We would not be, you know, advocating publicly against 77 if it wasn't something our staff didn't want. If our staff said, we are for this, we would be open with them about the numbers and talk what it was going to look like and make adjustments to our business model. But that is not what our staff has said. Our staff has said, protect us.
I thought you just wanted to drink on the radio.
Always. Well, now that I know you're here on Mondays.
Yeah. Well, now, devil's advocate here. I mean, this has already passed in 7 states. California being probably the biggest example of that. How has that landscape changed? How has that scenery changed since? I mean, obviously there's still restaurants and small business owners over there doing a thing. Like, why is that so different?
So I think representation really matters, especially at the ownership level. I think we talked a little bit about that when we talked about our own paths. And so ROC, the organization pushing this legislation, one of their big arguments is that increasing or eliminating the tip to minimum wage will eliminate discrimination and harassment in our industry. And as people who own restaurants, I think we are very convinced that the single most effective way that you can truly do that in any kind of sustainable, systemic way is to build culture that is safe and inclusive and where equity is valued and where professionalism is valued. And one of the side effects when costs go up 5 times and you add, say, $250,000 to your annual payroll costs is that restaurants, which are already really risky investments, become even riskier. And so you create all the more barriers to first-time business owners. And we need more women. We need more women and more people of color to enter into business ownership.
Sure.
And those are the people that traditionally have less access to capital, a harder time getting those first-time investments. So the representation at the ownership level is going to suffer. And as a result, we're not going to address these issues in any real way.
Well, and I will say, DC has really, in the last 7 years, I mean, we've gone through a boom from our inner restaurant scene, and it's benefited the whole city. And it would be a shame for that to be kind of dampened or hindered.
Yeah, and you're really, what this legislation does is it, in a lot of ways, it treats the symptom and not the cause, right? Like, tipping doesn't cause sexual harassment. Assholes do.
Right, right.
And the only way that we truly address that is, one, by creating these safe workplaces for our employees, but also enforce the current legislation and work as a community, as a local community, and with our city council to come up with ways to hold bad operators accountable. And this legislation doesn't do that. It makes it harder.
And I just want to jump on there and say, as costs go up, restaurants are businesses. You know, we are all small business owners. We will have to make decisions. You know, I touched on cutting benefits, but it's bigger than that. It's broader than the benefits side of things. It is deciding whose hours are going to get cut, mm-hmm. who is in a full-time role that will be asked to go to a part-time role. And as myself and other business owners are making these decisions, where do the people who are let go to work? Because I think you're going to see a reduction of staff citywide. And I think that, unfortunately, the people who are going to first be cut are, again, some of our most at-risk workers, because it's probably not going to be your strongest server. You know, it's going to be support staff. Service will probably suffer because you'll probably see a lot of restaurants start running without bussers and back waiters because, again, somewhere something is going to have to get cut to keep your restaurant solvent if you are adding, you know, over $20,000, $30,000 a month to labor costs.
Sure.
That puts most restaurants in a loss immediately.
So, I mean, this isn't a fix-all, this I-77, and it seems like it's trying to fix everything with one basically generic initiative.
I think that's just right, and I think it's important to note that this is an outside organization who came into D.C. Without a lot of industry knowledge and with taking no time to meet with our council members, sure. with us as small business owners, or with employees. They continue to say that they have a lot of tipped worker support, but have not been able to show that. That was not true when they kind of unveiled their One Fair Wage plan. I believe that was last Monday or 2 Mondays ago. And so it's really important, I think, to say as business owners, which Clementine has said, you know, we recognize there are some issues. I think it's important to go after bad operators. I think it's important to create better legislation to create safe work environments. But I think there are a class of restaurants and owners who have been opening in the last few years who are doing just that. And I think it would have been a lot more effective for an organization who does believe in fair labor to come into D.C. and talk to all of us and try to create and craft legislation that really protects the workers and also has small business interests at heart. You know, small business are the lifeblood to any city. And it would just be really disappointing to see so many businesses be adversely affected and probably many close. Because we all do this because we love it. There are easier ways to make a living.
I'm in it for the 3 to 4%. That's my. But I mean, I think that kind of sums it up. The vote is June 29th.
June 19th.
Okay, June 19th.
Early voting starts up to 10 days in advance.
Okay.
I think it's really important for people to know DC spent a long time letting us know that in primaries, only those associated with a party could vote. But because there is this initiative on the ballot, independents can also vote. Republicans, Democrats, independents, you do not have to be one of the major parties, which is very different from the last few, primary elections. And it's going to be really important that our council members hear from all of us. So small business owners, tipped employees, it's really important that you get out and vote, whatever side of the issue you're on, so that council members are really hearing from us, because they'll be in the position to respond to how the vote goes.
And I mean, if we've learned anything from the Trump administration so far, it's that one thing kind of leads to the next, and suddenly we're seeing a lot more people fighting the power, and we see a lot more women joining the ranks of Senate and Congress. And if anything, this initiative has kind of gotten you guys all together and fighting for a single cause. So let's keep building that culture, I guess.
Absolutely.
Amen.
All right. So real quick here, we do one little segment as we close called Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
Usually this is one or two guests, but today we have three. So I'm going to go round robin on this. Tip of the tongue, kind of just whatever hits you most or fastest. All right, Suzuka, food you are most afraid of?
Cilantro.
Cilantro. Oh,
I knew that about you.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry. I wish I loved it.
All right. Jill, what is your favorite board game?
Does Bananagrams count?
Bananagram counts, yeah.
Awesome. Bananagrams counts.
All right. Clementine, what is your most unusual nighttime or morning ritual?
Oh, God.
Rapid fire.
I just this really wellness bullshitty, like, turmeric almond milk concoction. It's, I read it on Goop. It's really, I'm sorry. It's, I did that.
That's, a, that's, a, that's a morning thing? Or?
It's a morning thing. Okay. Yeah.
Suzuka, what is your strongest sense?
Sense or sense?
Like taste, five, touch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Smell.
Smell.
Yeah.
Jill, what is your idea of the perfect DC date night?
Ooh, two Amy's. I mean, not even a question.
Yeah, holla. Classic.
Two Amy's, Peter Paston's Mecca, that wine bar. Here are, everyone, just so you know, you sit at the wine bar, you order from the skinny specials menu. You get a pizza there. You take a stuffed pizza to go because they reheat better.
Pro tip.
Yeah, pro tip.
Ultimate hack.
Ultimate hack. And you have the best time ever.
Come time, what's something you regret losing, selling, or giving away?
I get all the hard ones.
Yeah, you kind of do. Sorry about that.
Thanks, Clem.
What are your thoughts on purple?
I love purple. I can do that one. So back when the old post office was the old post office, there used to be a little kiosk in the middle called the Purple Place. And I used to make my mom take me there all the time. And I would buy, like, purple trinkets because I loved purple. That's
Don't we all?
Boo.
All right, Suzuka, I'm getting pressure from the other people here. I got to give you a tough one.
Ooh.
When is the last time you failed?
Oh, Jesus. It's deep and dark.
Yeah.
Should I just go really dark?
Yeah.
Let's go all the way.
It's probably going to be a couple of relationships ago.
Okay.
Real failure.
Okay.
Yeah. Not salvageable.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You heard it here on rapid fire.
Okay. I've missed a couple therapy sessions, so I'm just letting it out here.
Yeah, this is what it's for. No one else is listening except for Jill's mom and Eddie Kim. So.
Now Eddie knows. Yeah, I'm not talking about him.
And then, all right, we'll end on this one. And you guys can all three answer this one. Go to teenage drink. I'm not talking Kool-Aid.
Midori Sour.
Oh, boy.
Oh, baby.
Carlo Rossi.
My mom still drinks that. Sorry, Mom.
I was a teetotaler, so I did not drink.
All right. Well, welcome. All right. And so Eddie Kim is currently en route to Korea. He has made up his own very special Mary Fuck Kill for us.
Fuck Mary Kill.
All right, welcome to this very special edition of Fuck, Marry, Kill in honor of my impending 13-hour flight in the middle seat and awkwardly listening to the show on purchased Wi-Fi. Let's ask, what is your preferred drink on the airplane? The G&T, the Bloody Mary, or the Mimosa?
I see a lot of scribbling. You guys are very responsible people. Suzuka, you already know. I can tell.
Mary, the Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary.
Ugh.
Fuck the Mimosa.
Yeah.
Kill the G&T.
Kill the G&T is so dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's dead to me.
We could not be more different. I say kill the Bloody Mary. Fuck the Bloody Mimosa. Or fuck the Mimosa. Marry the G&T.
Oof.
Marry the G&T. Fuck the Bloody Mary. Kill the Mimosa.
All right, Eddie Kim, you have your answers. Godspeed. We'll see you on the other side.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you.
Next week, let's see.
None of those, for the record, are things I would ever drink on the plane.
Sure. What do you drink on the plane?
Yeah, he left off like whiskey on the rocks.
Whiskey on the rocks.
I'll take the little bottle of
red wine. Yeah, white wine. Pinot Grigio on the rocks.
These are Eddie's choices.
Uh-huh. Bad wine on the rocks is key. Yeah.
Also NyQuil.
Well, I mean, yeah, my personal is the edible, so edible and sleeping pills. All right, friends. Well, thank you for joining us. You can revisit
so much.
This week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. Find us on all the social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC. And a special thank you to Jeffrey for our intro music and DJ Rec Tech for the hilarious sound effects. Next week.
And join us next week as Bill Murray makes time to hang with us and to talk about gelato versus sorbet.
What?
How do we end this Cold War? See you guys.
That's a get. What?
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.